That's later. Wait. But yes. Okay. We are holding on Chaf Aleph on the Beis about 20 lima, two-thirds of the way down the Omid, the line against L'Chayusi.
And by the way, Trump
later,
spoke
later,
to him about
later.
The settlements.
Okay, later. All right. We started yesterday talking, Rav Huna had said that if you have a person living in a Mavri and somebody else comes to build, so comes to start a competing business, the other guy is allowed to tell him no because you're taking away some of my livelihood, and we discussed a little bit the pros and cons of that. So, Maisri, the Gemara says, we have another contradiction. Besides, we brought a braisa yesterday about catching fish, which we thought was a proof for him. We said not necessarily. We said that maybe Rav Huna holds like Rav Yehuda about not giving nuts and candies to the kids, and we said that no, because even Rav Yehuda might, even the Chachamim might agree over here that it's okay because you're not actually taking away the customers. You're just you're opening another business. They have their choice to go to one or the other. Okay. A person, this price says, is allowed to open a store next door to somebody else's store of the same kind, or a bathhouse next to the other guy's bathhouse, and the other guy, the first guy, cannot protest, does not have the ability to stop him, because the second person can say, fine, you're doing it on your property, I'm doing it on my property. I have the right to use my property as I see fit. So therefore, that contradicts Rav Huna. The answer is Tanoihi. It's actually Machlokes Tanoim. Which, okay, Tosfos points out, I mean, we tried to say before, it's Machlokes Tanoim, the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, about the case of the nuts being given to the kid. But here we have a more explicit braisa that talks about this particular issue. So the Gemara is answering that we can say it's Machlokes Tanoim, and therefore Rav Huna is not contradicted by this braisa because we can find another braisa that says differently.
It's one of the oldest tricks in the book.
Namely, the Tanya, Kofin b'nei mavoyas zeh, members of a mavri can force each other, shaloi lahoshe b'neim lechayek lebruski v'leim lamed tenokus, that they should not have settle among them. They should not have, for example, that somebody should rent a house in their mavri to a chayat, a tailor, v'le burski, or tanner, v'le melamed tenokus, or a teacher. What the deal about the teacher we'll talk about soon. V'le echad mibnei bali umanir, so anybody else who has any kind of trade. However, if it's a neighbor who lives in the same mavri, then you cannot force him. You cannot prevent him from opening a competing business. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm after Shechene Kefeo. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, no, even if it's a shochan, you can still force him. So there you go. Rav Huna would be going according to Reb Shimon Gamliel then. And the Chachamim disagree with that. That was the previous braisa where we said that you can open a store next door to the other guy's store.
That's why it's machlokes.
From Rashi, the way Rashi learns this situation over here is, we're talking about when the case that we were talking about before in the Gemara. You have already, for example, one tailor in the Mavri. Now you have somebody else wants to open another tailor's shop next door, and it's gonna take away business. So we're saying if it's a shochan, then you can't prevent him from doing that.
If
it's already a neighbor in the same Mavri, then according to the Chachamim, you can't prevent him, and according to the Shimon Gamliel, you can. Whereas if it's somebody coming from another Mavri to open a tailor's shop in your Mavri, then you can prevent him. So in other words, according to Rashi, the key thing is, according to Rashi's understanding of it, the issue we're talking about over here is that it is the issue of competition. We're saying if the other person is from the same Mavri, if he himself lives in that same Mavri, then fine, he's allowed to open a competing business according to the Chachamim, not according to the Shem Gamliel. But if he comes from another Mavri, then not. The Rambam learns it almost the other way around. The Rambam learns the issue over here is not competition. The issue is we're talking about in this last braisa. Suppose the members of the Mavri may say, for example, we don't want any tailor at all to be in our Mavri because it's going to increase foot traffic, it's going to increase noise, whatever it is. However, if there is already one tailor over there, for example, then they can't prevent another tailor from opening his business because you already have one tailor. You obviously didn't mind the foot traffic and whatever. Therefore, you can't object to another one. That's how the Rambam learns it.
Now, a Borsky can't be someone who does skin from scratch because they then entail the use of urine, which is very smelly.
True. So maybe it means
like
small. Maybe it means a small burski where it's not such a, so it's not so objectionable to smell. Oh. All right. Amar Rav Huna b'Rebbe Rav Yeshua. shittily. Now, it's obvious to me the following day. Bar Masa, Bar Masa, Achriki, Motsi, Ma'akib. If you have, oh, so by the way, as far as the Malamed Tinokas, by the way, as far as the Malamed Tinokas, Tosfos says that Tosfos starts by wanting to say that we're talking about a person who's teaching Goyish to children. So therefore, again, according to Rashi, once you have one in the Mavri, then he can prevent somebody else from a different Mavri from coming and opening another school for Goyish to children over there, because it'll take away students from him. And then Tosfos goes on to say that maybe even it's talking about Jewish children. But fine, you already have a Malamed over there. What are you opening another one as competition? At the end of the Amud, we're going to talk about that issue again. Okay. Fine. Amud Rav Huna. Now it's obvious to me the following day. Bar Masa Bar Masa Achriti. If you have one person who lives in the city and another person from another city wants to come and open a competing business in the city, Matzi Ma'akev, then the one who already lives there is able to prevent him from coming in and opening that competing business. The Shayach, the Targa, the Hacha, however, if that second person is Shayach to the local taxes, meaning, in other words, Rashi says that Rashi explains it means he already pays his head tax to the local mayor, just like one of the local people. So then in that sense, he's already considered a member of the city. So then loy mati ma'akev. The first person can't prevent him from opening up shop in the same city, because fine, since he pays taxes over there, he's considered like a resident of the city. There's a few different explanations among Rishonim what exactly shayach b'karga means. Does it mean that he actually paid the tax? Does it mean basically that he's prepared to pay the tax? There's different understandings of that. Different versions.
Well,
or not. If he wants to pay his taxes in different places, then fine. I guess, yeah, maybe. Yeah. No, but so here we're talking about the kind of tax that a resident pays. We're not necessarily talking about business taxes, like where he has a corporation that has offices in different places. We're talking about local taxes. A person is only going to pay that in one place.
That's it. You can come.
But to answer Yaakov's question, a karga, a head tax, is not the kind of thing you would pay in different places. Your income taxes, for example, you might pay in different places or whatever, but not a head tax is something wherever you live. It's strictly where you live, where your main residence. Yeah, where your main residence is. Okay. Now. Furthermore, Rav Huna B'Rei D'Rishua says, it's obvious to me that one member of a Mavri cannot prevent another person who lives in the same Mavri from opening a competing business. Because like we said before, the Chachamim have no problem with that. Boy, Rav Huna B'Rei D'Rishua. However, now we have the question, what about if you have the two people who live in the same city, but one of them lives in one Mavri and the other one lives in another Mavri? And now the one who lives in the second Mavri wants to open a competing business in the first one. Can he prevent him from opening that competing business? And the answer is teku. Basically, the question is, when the Rabbanon said before shachin, does it mean how close a shachin does he have to be? He lives in the same Mavri or just that he lives in the same city? So teku. Here, unlike the tekus that we said yesterday, it's not the pretty much all the poskim say he is allowed to do it. So what's the difference? Why yesterday we said that in the case of the various tzvekas about the bakery under the other guy's oitzer or whatever, we said that Rambam is machmir, whereas over here not. One answer that's given is because over there the hezek is more direct. The heat of your bakery or the smell of your refes or whatever is directly going to harm the stuff up in the oitzer. Here it's a more indirect thing. You're going to open a competing business, and as a result, therefore, other customers are going to come, and it's not necessarily right. So it's not as direct a thing. This whole concept, by the way, about this whole concept, which we're starting to talk about over here, and we're going to talk more on Chavdeis about preventing people from other towns from coming and then from coming and opening businesses over there. There's a famous thing, and anybody who reads up on medieval Jewish history comes across at some point something called Cheska Tayishuv. The Ramah talks about it a little bit in Chosh and Mishpat in these dinim. There came a point in history when it was hard for Jews to be able to live anywhere. As it is, the local goyim barely tolerated them, and if there were too many of them, they would just expel them all. So therefore, the basis of the Takana maybe even goes back to the Ben Gershom, whatever. It's discussed quite a bit by the Rishonim, the concept of Cheskas HaYishuv, that you have to have, you have to have, you, the Kehillah has an official permit, like to live in a certain place, and they're allowed to grant permits who's going to live there and who's not.
That's
so it's a hard thing to be able to say to a fellow Yid, look, I'm sorry, but you can't live here. But
exactly.
That was the situation; they had no choice to, because otherwise it's going to ruin things for everybody else. So therefore, it does get into the question of what the Gemara is mentioning over here. If he's paying, it's a related concept to be able. If a person's going to be living in town, he's going to be opening a business there. So it's a related concept. So that it does factor in what the Gemara is saying over here about if he pays karga, if he already pays his taxes over here, then to that extent he's already considered a member of that town. But they have, in general, it was a hard situation. But sometimes, you know, hard situations make for hard choices.
It applies only to a Jewish.
We're talking about this is the leaders of the Jewish communities found it necessary to restrict the number of Jews who can live in that area, because otherwise the goyim would just be fed up with them and kick them all out. So therefore, the Ramaz goes so far as to say that on this basis, along with the Chezkas Yishuv, there was something called Cheder Yishuv, where if somebody doesn't follow the rules and demands to settle here anyway, they'll put a Cheder on him. And the Ramaz says it's justified because that guy is acting like a goyim. If he persists, then everybody is going to lose out. And that's the basis of that. So this is one of those kinds of things. You know, we should be very grateful. This is one of those things to be very grateful that we live in a liberal democratic society where there's no limitations, at least not any official ones, on how many Jews can live in a certain area. So no need for a Chazkas HaYishuv. Okay, onward. However, Rav Huna, even Rav Huna, who said that you can't open a competing business in the same Mavri, he would agree when it comes to teachers, when it comes to Malamdim, that you cannot prevent another person from setting up a competing school in the same Mavri. The Omamar, because we learn in a Braisa.
We don't rely on the previous...
We say that rule that Rav Huna said applies only to other kinds of businesses. It does not apply to a malamed.
Right.
But Tosfos talked about that maybe even Rav Shimon Gamliel, who restricted it further, maybe even Rav Shimon Gamliel would agree to that a malamed is an exception.
But we saw... We
mentioned a malamed a few lines ago.
Right.
That's what Tosfos said. Either there it's talking about a malamed of Goyish children,
right.
Or even if it's talking about a malamed of Jewish children, maybe we're saying that Rav Shimon Gamliel would say, okay, maybe to the extent that he has a problem with it is because you're interfering with the other guy's livelihood, or maybe not actually, that even Rav Shimon Gamliel would agree when it comes to teaching children that he would make an exception to that. So, to Omamar, so this next part is in parenthesis because most Rishonim don't have this Girsa, but it's okay, we'll learn it anyway. Ezra Tikkun Lan Yisrael, Shia Meshivin Sefer B'Tzad Sefer, that Ezra made a takana that there can be one teacher near another. So the question is, V'Nechrish Durma Osu Leisra Shuli. Sefer is a teacher, yeah. V'Nechrish Durma Osu Leisra Shuli. Why aren't we afraid that one of them is going to get careless? He's going to think that I'm the better teacher, everybody's going to come to me. Or like we learned yesterday, if I care, the other one is going to think nobody's coming to me anyway, and then give up learning. The answer is kinas from Tavu Chochma. So again, if we don't have that parenthesis, then it's just to Omamar kinas from Tavu Chochma. The jealousy, the competition between Sofrim increases wisdom. So both of them will end up gaining, right? Omer of Nachman Vayitzchok Umoyder of Huna Breidir Veshua Beroychon Amas. So actually, it's interesting. Marsha says the reason why we use the expression sofrim over here, he says, sofrim are a lower level than chachamim. The mission at the end of Sota, it's Choru Chachimai, Lamehavri Kisafraya, whatever. So the point is, sofrim are not yet at the level of real chachamim. They still need this kina to motivate them in order to become better sofrim. Once they're on the level of chachamim, they don't need that kina anymore. They're self-motivated.
Yeah. Who says that?
The Marsha. Okay. Omer of Nachman Beitzchok. Also, Rav Huna Breidir Rav Yishua would agree, even though we're saying that normally Rav Huna Breidir Rav Yishua, who had said that somebody who comes from another city, you can prevent him from setting up shop in your city where he's going to compete with you. Rav Huna Breidir Rav Yishua would agree when it comes to peddlers who go around from one town to another selling various things, including, among other things, they sell cosmetics for women. You cannot prevent them from coming and circulating around your city to be able to sell their stuff. Why? Domamar, Ezra Tikkun Lan Yisrael, because we learn in Bava Kamma that Ezra made a takana for the Jewish people, she'yuroichlen machzirin bayaros, that these peddlers should travel around among the cities, kadeshiyu tachshitin mitzuyin lebnais Yisrael, in order that cosmetics, perfumes, whatever, should be available for Jewish women. Yeah. So therefore, to prevent peddlers from another city from coming and doing business around your city would create problems with that. You wouldn't have the local peddlers may not supply enough.
What about these days where women sell to other women? Would that still apply, or they could?
These days you don't have peddlers anyway. These days I don't trust
peddlers today.
Not really. Nah, you
have the flower guy.
Huh? Yeah. You buy online or you buy in stores or whatever. You don't really go to door to door selling. Maybe the Avon lady, I don't know, but you know.
Right.
Okay.
True.
Yeah. Okay.
Encyclopedia salesman.
Yeah. I think they're a dying breed. Okay.
God.
The Hanimili Lahaduri. However, this only applies that we're saying they're allowed to go circulate around in the city. Avalak Bui Loi, but for them to set up an actual shop in the city, that we're saying not. So that would be restricted because, again, they're from another town, and unless they pay the local taxes, they don't have the right to compete with the local merchants. Besides, you know what? I'm tired of a peddler peddling around. I want to set up shop. You know what? In American history, you can look it up. A number of the big American department stores started out that way. Yeah. Macy's is an example. Yeah, there's a couple of others. Yeah.
A lot of Jewish stores.
Indeed. Yeah.
Why do we call them Reuchel? Reuchel is not Reuchel.
Yeah, well, that's
why Reuchel
is called that, because he goes around peddling Lashon Hara from one person to another. Do you know what Pliny said about you? Yeah. Okay.
But the actual
meaning of Reuchel itself is neutral, but depends what you're peddling. If you're peddling cosmetics, then good. If you're peddling Lashon Hara, not so good.
Like peddling, what was Clinton accused of peddling? Influence.
Yeah. Okay.
Same word.
Yeah. Okay. Onward. However, if this peddler is a Talmud Chacham, afilu lak bui nami, then we will even allow him to set up shop in town, even though he's from another town, even though he's not necessarily paying the local taxes, nevertheless. As we find that Rava allowed Rabbi Yoshi and Rabbi Avadia, lak bui, to set up shop in town, deloika hilchata, and that was not according to the usual halacha. It was lifnei mishurat hadin. My time, and now what's the reason? Kiven did abonim ninu, because since they are tamid chachamim, also litu drumigir saihu. If we don't allow them to set up shop and they constantly have to circulate around selling their stuff, then it's going to distract them from their learning. So in order to allow them the maximum amount of possible time to learn, we will allow them to set up shop permanently.
I just thought of something. They're not from town.
They're not from town, right.
Now, they're there for a mission of Torah, probably. They're there to go to the yeshiva.
To the yeshiva,
So they got to sell their stuff and then go to the yeshiva to learn.
I guess so, yeah.
With the yeshiva. Line of what you're saying, that we're concerned about their learning, but we really don't accept them and desire them for the chokhmah that they're going to bring to the local area.
Once they're in the area, of course they're going to bring chokhmah. That's why we should allow them to set up shop, let them sell their wares, and then they'll be able to learn in the local yeshiva and be able to learn with the lama. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So another case in this connection, Hanu Dikuloi.
Very important.
Yes. Yeah. Hanu Dikuloi de Aisu Dikuloi Lebavel. It once happened that some Dikuloi brought their wares to Bavel. It actually gives two explanations of Dikuloi. One is that it means they sold, one explanation of Rashi is it means that they sold baskets, in which case these baskets may well have been made out of palm leaves, from deca leaves. Yeah. The other explanation Rashi says is it means they sold pots. Whatever it is, it says the word dikula over there.
Yeah, that doesn't mean a pot. Does it chaticha gabe chaticha or chaticha b'tachar rotzim?
Okay, all right. So anyway, so they brought their wares to Bavel. Also, b'nei Moshe kama akvi l'vay. Bavel over here doesn't mean the country, by the way. It means the city of Bavel within Bavel. It's not like you have New York City and New York State. So you have the city of Bavel and the country of Bavel. Okay. Also, b'nei Moshe kama akvi l'vay. So the people of the city of Bavel came to object. Also, yeah, of course, but there was the same problem that we were saying before, the competition from out of town. Also, l'kamei d'Ravina, so they came to Ravina for a din Torah. Alma l'hu, so he tells them, look, me alma osu v'la alma lizabnu. Fine, they came from the outside world, it's market day, v'la alma lizabnu, let them sell to the people who are coming from out of town. In other words, it actually says the same logic as it's market day in town here, people are coming from all the outlying villages to buy, Well, by the same token, these people can come from the outlying villages themselves. Some that are shown him learn. Tosfos, for example, learns, and a number of other Rishonim also, that they're only allowed to sell to the out-of-towners. They're Bedavka not allowed to sell to the in-towners in order not to create competition with the local dealers. Many other Rishonim say that no. They say that all Ravina means is they can, because it's market day, let them go ahead and sell. They can't stand and come on a regular day and sell, but on market day we give them more latitude. They can even sell to the local people. Maybe. According to Tosfos, would they have to ask for ID? Maybe. I don't know.
It's unconstitutional.
Come on. Okay. The Hani Mila be Yomi Deshukah. However, even this only applies on a day, on a market day. Avavolo Yomi Deshukah Loi. But if it's not a market day, then no.
Then no what?
Then no, they're not allowed to come in and sell their stuff unless they pay the local taxes, like we said before.
Let me ask you a question, because is it the stuff that is produced locally, or is produced from
other areas? Some people here in town that produce that sell it. Doesn't matter where it's produced. There are some people here in town that sell these things, and then you have these people out of town are coming to try and sell it, they're going to undercut. What?
It couldn't be fruit.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, yeah. That's the next case. It's going to be involving fruits. Yeah, yeah. Or two cases from now. Yeah. Okay. Over Yom HaShuk Nami Laimun, and even if it's on a Yom HaShuk, also the permission is only Elul Zabuni B'Shukah. They're allowed to sell it there in the market. Avla Aduri Loi, but we don't allow it. We don't allow them to go circulate around in the city to go door to door selling their stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, these are rules. I mean, you have to balance the rights of the local people with the rights of the out of towners. Yeah.
First, you have to see from an economic perspective if this is going towards increasing local commerce. And apparently it's not.
Apparently it's taking away local commerce. Okay, yeah, you're right. Now that you mention it, there are some of the folks who say that, for example, if it'll lower prices for the local people,
exactly,
it'll make it easier for them to buy,
exactly,
then maybe there's more latitude over here. We're not getting into that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah. All right. Another case. Hanu Amiroi de'osu Amro lepumnara. De'aisu Amro lepumnara. There were once these wool merchants who brought their wool to sell in Pumnara, the name of a city in Babel. Again, also b'nei Masa kamak v'lavayu. The people of Pumnara came to prevent them from selling their stuff. Also l'kamei de Rav Kahana. So they came to Rav Kahana for a din Torah. Amalahu, and Rav Kahana says, yes, dinahu de'ma'ak v'alaychu. Yes, they have a point. They're validly allowed to stop you, like we said. Omrulay, however, they said to Rav Kahana, this is a special situation. Islan Ashroy, the Masa Hagar Tabakhad, we have credit in not credit. We have people who we've sold on credit here in town. Previous times when we've been here, we've sold to people on credit. Now we need to wait over here, we need to be here in town in order to collect our receivables. And if during that time you don't allow us to sell our wool, what are we supposed to live off of?
These out-of-towners
had previously been in town. They'd sold wool to people on credit.
Right.
Now they're coming to town. They want to accomplish two things. They want to be able to, the main thing they're in town for is in order to be able to collect their accounts receivable. Right. But while we're here, if we don't allow us to sell our wool, what are we supposed to, we can't make any money.
But wait a minute. So it's a self-generating cycle.
Omer lehu, so he tells them, zilu zabnu shir chayusayhu. Fine, you can go sell the basic amount that you need in order to make a basic amount of money. No, cash on the barrel head. Adakritu ashroya bidhu, until you get all your accounts receivable paid off. Vazlitu, and then you got to go. So that's another exception to these rules, is if they have outstanding creditors over there,
yes,
then they can deal with that, and then they can sell while they're there. Yeah. Okay. Another case. Rav Dimi min Hauda, I see grogris spina. Rav Dimi min Hauda one time brought dried figs on a ship to another town to sell. Amalei Resh Galusa, apparently the town must have been Mechoza, because Rava lived there, as we'll see. Amalei Resh Galusa L'Rava, so the Resh Galusa, who's in charge of things in town and in general in Rava, says to Rava, Puk Chazi Itzurhu Min Abonahu, go see if he is a Tamad Chacham. And if he is, Noket Le Shukah. If he is, then hold the market for him, meaning make an announcement that nobody else who has dried figs to sell should sell them until he finishes selling his. And that way he has an exclusive market for the time being. They did that. The Rambam explains they did that as an honor to the Talmid Chachamim. And many other Rishonim say it's not so much a matter of honor. It's more like we said before. This way they can sell their stuff and get back to their learning as soon as possible. However, you need to check him out first. You need to make sure that he is who he says he is. Yeah. So Rava doesn't do it himself. He delegates it to Rav Ada Bar Abba, one of his Talmidim.
And
Puk Toilei B'Kankane literally means go sniff his barrel. Meaning, like the same way as you have, when you have wine, you hire an expert to sniff it and see if it's still good wine or if it's turning sour. The same way, go check out, go find out whether, go test him and see what whether he's a Talmud Chacham. Nofak Ozel, so Rav Ada Bar Abba went. Bomine, he goes, he finds Rav Dimi, and he asks him the following question. Pil Shabolak Trifa Mitzris, if an elephant swallowed a basket made out of arava branches, out of arava branches or leaves or whatever. Kfifa means a basket. Mitzris, like the kind they make in Mitzrayim, or actually Rashi says not so much Mitzrayim, but Meloshin Nitzorim, staves of willow branches, arava branches. Yeah. So an elephant swallowed this thing, the Hekia Derech Beisari, and then he excreted it out the other end. It went through his whole system, it came out intact out the other end. Mahu, what is the din? Is it Makabal Truma or not? Now, if it was still considered a basket, it would be Makabal Truma. On the other hand, if now we consider it as if it was like digested by the elephant, then it would be considered clay glolim. It would be considered a keli made out of dung, which is not Makabal Truma. Okay, so Rashi explains we're talking about over here. The situation is that the elephant swallowed a whole basket and it passed out the other end still whole. Tosfos points out that actually we have that discussion in Menachos. The Gemara discusses this. And the Gemara concludes over there that if the elephant actually swallowed a whole basket and it came out intact, there's no question it's still Makabal Truma. No maisa has been done to make it no longer a basket. You need a maisa in order to make it no longer a keli. There's no maisa done over here. Therefore, so now the Gemara then goes on to discuss there in Menachos a related case. What happens if it's not an actual basket? What if the elephant just swallowed the six of the arava branches, and later on, after they passed through its system and came out intact the other end, then somebody takes these branches and weaves them together to make a basket. Now you can ask whether it's clay golem or not, and that the Gemara leaves unresolved. So if we say like Rashi that the question is an actual basket, that it swallowed an actual basket, then when the Gemara goes on to say that lo hava biyade, that Rav Dimi didn't know the answer, so Tosfos says, well, why ever not? He should have known based on that Gemara.
That's a pretty easy question.
So that's why Tosfos prefers the explanation that we're talking about, that the elephant swallowed loose pieces and then afterwards you made them into a basket. Which, yes, the Gemara leaves it unresolved over there. In that case, what's the problem of Rav Dimi not knowing it? The answer is the Gemara goes through a whole discussion about it over there.
In
Menachos. Rav Ada Bar Abba might have expected that Rav Dimi find the answer. Taka, there's no answer, but at least he should be able to describe what the possibilities are. You know, so when you take a test, like you know, there's a big difference between just saying I don't know versus at least you know you write whatever you do know. You know, and then the teacher might give you partial credit. Same idea over here. You know. There are other Mephoshim defend Rashi, and they say maybe we are talking about the case of the actual basket. Still, how do we know that it's still Makabal Truma? We know that based on a Mishnah in Masechet Taharos, in Seder Taharos, in Masechet Kelim. Not all the Amoraim were so experts in Seder Taharos, so therefore it was a reasonable thing that Rav Dimi might not know.
They didn't really use Tahara.
Well, right. That's why it was learned less.
By the Rabbanan, did they keep Tahara?
Maybe not, but apparently we find in different places in the Gemara that at certain times during the period of the Amoraim, they focused mainly on the four Sdarim, Moyed, Noshim, Nezikim, and Kodshim, and not so much Zeroyim and Taharas.
Doesn't mean they didn't keep Taharas.
No, it doesn't mean they didn't, because it's a practical matter. The Mekesh is destroyed, they have no Parad or Mashin, they're living in Bavel anyway, so therefore, Tumah V'Taharah, most of the dinim of Tumah V'Taharah were left. That's the two different ways of looking at it. According to Rashi, the answer might be Rav Dimi didn't know because he's not familiar with that Mishnah.
Right.
According to Tosfos, rather since. In the end, it's Teku, then Itaka didn't know the answer. Okay. Whatever it is. Amalei. So Rav Dimi asks, Mau niu Rava? He asks Rav Ada Bar Abba, are you Rava? He heard that Rava is a great person in the city, so he figured this person who came to test him is probably Rava. Tofach le besandole. So instead of answering, Rav Ada Bar Abba hit him on his shoe. Meaning Rashi says, like, you take a stick and sort of like tapped his shoe. Derech schoik, Rashi says, like a as a joke, like as a joke, like you do to somebody who's not important.
Rav Dimi?
Rav Abba Bar Abba, the local, does that to Rav Dimi, the visitor.
To Rav
Dimi. Omar, Omale, and he says to him, Bendidi l'Rava ikatova. No, you should, don't think that I'm Rava. There's a big difference between me and Rava. Miu, nevertheless, al kochach, anor Rava, the Rava, Rava the Rava. But you have to admit, then, I must be your Rebbe, because I know the answer to that question about the elephant, and you don't. And Rava, who is my Rebbe, is the Rebbe, is therefore the Rebbe of your Rebbe. He's far higher than you. Well, lo noktu le shuka. So the upshot was they didn't end up holding the market because Rav Abba Bar Abba came back with his report that this guy is not so much of a Talmid Chacham, and therefore they didn't and therefore posted Grogus today. So his Grogus ended up spoiling because he couldn't find any customers for that. Okay, but he failed the test. Well, also the Kameh did Rav Yosef. So Rav Dimi Min Hajar came to complain to Rav Yosef. Avale says Chozimar my Abdali. Look what they did to me. They called me a Hefsid. Amale. So Rav Yosef answers him, Mandala Shaya Lunisa de Malka de Edem Lin Shaila Unisach. The Eivishter who did not hold back, who did not delay paying back for the embarrassment that was done to the king of Edom, will not hold back from paying back for your embarrassment. What's the story with the king of Edom? Just did. You have a pasuk in Amos. Koyamar Hashem, Ashlosha Pishim Moyav Valabal Ashivenu. For three Averis of Moyav, I'm willing to give them a chance. Rashi explains on the Pesukim over there. This is part of a whole series of Nevuahs where Amos does like that. What? But for the fourth one, I'm not going to hold back. I'm not going to hold back from punishing him. And what is that fourth one? I'll surfe Asmus Melech Edom Lasid, because they burnt the bones of the king of Edom to make lime, to make plaster. What is that? What exactly was the story? I mean, some of the Mephoshim, the Radak, and some of the other Mephoshim explain. There's a story in Melachim and Melachim Beis that tells how at one point the king of Israel, the king of Yehuda, and the king of Edom, or the governor of Edom, because at that time there was no real king, whatever, went to fight against Moav, and they were winning the Derech Nes. The whole long story over there until the king of Moav takes his Benoy HaBachur, his eldest son, Ashayimlech Sakta, who's going to be his heir, and brings him and sacrifices him as a korban above the city walls, on top of the city walls. So the Gemara in Tainis discusses it and says that actually it meant
which city?
So the capital of Moav, whatever it was. But the Gemara understands, and Rashi also explains on the pasuk over there, that it means the king of Moav brought his own son as a korban. Because the Gemara describes over there, they said to his advisors, how come is it that these Jews are winning such tremendous victories, Shaloi Tederach HaTeva? And they answered him, because they have the schutz of their ancestor Abraham with the Akedah. So he says, fine, I'll do the same thing. But
no angel came and stopped.
No, right. But anyway, the Radak and some of the other Mephoshim explain that, no, Benoi HaBachur means the son of the king of Edom. Somehow, during the fighting, they managed to capture the crown prince of Edom. And now the king of Moav goes and then sacrifices him as a korban on top of the wall. And therefore, afterwards, then the pasuk continues over here, having burnt him as a sacrifice to his idol, now he compounds the insult by taking that and using it for lime to plaster his palace or whatever. So, and the Eivishter is saying, for that, I'm going to pay back Moav. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef says to Rabbi Dimi, the Eivishter who paid back Moav for their insult to the king of Edom will be sure to pay back for the insult to you. So it's true it's not going to help the actual Hefsid, but...
Why not? Yeah.
No, because the fact of the matter is, his figs are spoiled, but that there's no particular recourse for, but at least that the insult, at least the insult, yeah, the fact that he had to feel bad about it. Yeah. So a couple of different interesting nuances over here.
Yeah.
Marsha says, first of all, why of all things mention the story of the insult for the king of Edom? Aren't there other, we have other sources that say the Eivishter pays, but we learned in Bava Metzia, we had a whole story about how the Eivishter is deeply concerned about the Onas Dvarim. He says, yes, but this is the only example in Tanakh where we find that the Eivishter pays back for Onas Dvarim of a single individual. For harm done to a single individual. So therefore, he's telling him that they're, even if it was only a single individual, in that case, the king of Edom, who was insulted, then the Eivishter pays back for it. So the same way, you're a single individual, there is a very...
I also noticed a similarity that after he was killed, he added insult to injury by plastering his palace with him. So to after he threw him out, he hit his shoe.
Maybe, yeah, and there is that also, yeah.
So
sorry for interrupting.
No, that's, yeah, I was going to say, there's a very interesting idea that the Reb Chaim Vital brings in Sefer Abdul Gulim. He says that the Reb Dimi Min Hadar that we're talking about, but he was actually a Gilgul Chizkiah.
Oh,
so which brings one explanation, therefore, why we're mentioning specifically Melech Edom, is because the Eibishter got back at Moab for insulting a Goyish king, Melech Edom. How much more so than the Eibishter is going to get back at somebody who insults somebody with a Gilgul of a Jewish king, of Chizkiah. I also saw an explanation from one of the more recent Mekubalim who explains maybe that's why he asked him specifically about this case of an elephant swallowing a basket. Basically, the question boils down to, do we consider the basket as still the same one that it was before the elephant swallowed it, or do we consider it now a new thing? The same way we can look at, Rav Dimi, are you still a continuation of Chizkiyahu from hundreds of years ago? In that case, you rank above us. Or, then you are a distinguished Talmid Chacham. Or are you like a whole new person? In that case, then, relative to us, Rav Abba Ba'aba is telling him you're nothing. So therefore, there's a certain connection over there. Marshall, by the way, has a long explanation that when Rav Dimi comes to complain to Rav Yosef, he also has another meaning in mind. He's saying it sounds like Rav Adar Ba'aba is actually insulting a number of the contemporary Amiroyim, even you, because we're going to see in a few lines that Rav Adar Ba'aba says about himself that I go ahead of him. The him in context over there means the servant of Rava when they were going to buy meat in the store. But it could also be understood that Adar Ba'aba is claiming to be greater than Rava. And in that case, it comes out that he's also saying that when he says, I'm not Rabbah, but Rabbah can also mean Rav Yosef, that he's putting Rava ahead of you, Rav Yosef. And therefore, Rav Yosef explains to him, no, he didn't insult
Wait, hold on.
Me.
Who's putting who ahead of who?
Rav Adar Ba'aba by saying, Rav Adar Ba'aba was still alive at this point. Don't do spoilers.
We didn't get to that yet. Okay.
When he says, "Anor Rabbah, Rava Rabbah the Rabbah," it could be understood mistakenly like this: I am greater than you because I know this halacha and you don't.
Okay.
And Rava is the Rebbe of your Rebbe. Now, who is Rav Dimi Min Hadar's Rebbe? Rav Yosef. Therefore, it comes out, Rav Dimi Min Hadar himself was a Talmud of Rav Yosef.
Oh.
So therefore, it comes out, effectively, he's saying Rava is greater than you, Rav Yosef.
So
therefore, Rav Yosef
His Rebbe is from Medina.
Well, this story may have happened.
Rabbi Yosef is in
anyway,
Medina, so I assume it's from Medina.
Yeah. So the Marsha explains that therefore Rabbi Yosef answers him, don't worry. Rabbi Adar Ba'aba didn't insult me. He didn't insult Rava. The only one he insulted is you. Okay, so the Eibishter will deal with that.
Why you can say that? I mean,
because he says that's not what he meant. He meant that Rava is Rabba the Rabbah, meaning, in other words, that he, Rav Adar Ba'aba, feels himself to be your Rebbe because he knows more than you. And Rava, who is his Rebbe, is two levels greater than you. He's not talking about me in this picture at all. And he's not putting down Rava either. And when he says later on that I'm greater than him, he means Rava's servant. He doesn't mean Rava himself. Okay, that's Marshall's explanation. All right. So Rav Adar Ba'aba passed away shortly after this. Rav Yosef Amar no Anishte. So Rav Yosef says, I'm the one who punished him. Meaning, not to say he's not taking credit for it, Chas V'Shalom. Tosfos explains on the contrary. He and all the other Amiroyim who are going to talk over here are all blaming themselves for it. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos,
I was punished, Anishte.
Ano Anishte means I caused him to be punished, but therefore that's a problem for me. I created a bad situation for myself. I'm not on the level I should be. Because the Gemara explains in Shabbos, Tosfos quotes it over here, that kol mi shechaver nanesh al yadoi, that if you have somebody else is punished because of you, ein machnis enotzim tchitzas shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that person who was the cause of it doesn't end up being brought into the Eibishter's innermost place in Gan Eden. So therefore, Rav Yosef, by saying, Ano Anishte, is effectively saying, I'm at fault over here. I've lost my place in Chitzas Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of Adar Ba'aba was punished through me.
How?
Maybe they need. So I'll tell you, the Chidah goes even further than Tosfos over here. The Chidah comments, basically, he says, if you look at that Gemara and Shabbos, it comes out that when do we say Ein Machnis Anos Ben Chitzasai? Only if you actually caused it somehow or other.
Exactly.
For example, you daven that the person should be punished or whatever. But we're going to have other examples in the Gemara over here. We're going to have Abaye in a minute, for example.
How did he cause it specifically?
Because he said the Eibishter who punished, the Eibishter will pay back for your embarrassment.
But he didn't mean.
He didn't necessarily mean, but nevertheless, the fact that he said such a thing allowed it. But anyway, so the Chidah says like this. The Gemara and Shabbos is talking about over there, let's say, for example, that you caused it to happen, the other person to get punished. Let's say you daven that he should get punished. But you have a Gemara in Sanhedrin where the Eibishter says to David HaMelech that because of you, Noiv Irakonim was wiped out, and Doeg ended up getting punished, and Shaul ended up getting punished, even though David didn't have, all David did was he was starving, and he came to Noiv Irakonim and asked for food, and Doeg ended up saying Lashon Hara about him. And still, the Eibishter holds David responsible that because of him, the whole chain of events started. So we see, the Chidah says, even when you didn't actually daven for it to happen, you're still on an even higher level. And the Gemara is talking about over there on Shabbos, you're still held responsible. And that's what the Amoraim over here are concerned about. Even if we didn't directly cause it, the fact that we didn't say that thing in Kriyas Shema Shalmit or whatever, and explicitly be moichel him, may have caused the trouble.
Or prevented that by praying his prayer, and should have seen it then?
Apparently not. I don't know. I mean, he was starving. He didn't have a choice. All right.
He should have abstained.
Oh, yeah. He was starving. He didn't have a choice. Okay. Onward.
But if he didn't have a choice, how come the Eibishter was
because
upset?
It's overfought. What do you call it? Magavul and Tzlosai Dezakar B'choy V'aladei. If a choy, if Noiv Irakonim gets wiped out through him, then there's a certain flaw in David that needs to be corrected. So here it's a similar kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. So Rav Yosef Amar no anishtei da no lataise, because I cursed him. I said that the Eibishter should pay back for the insult that was done to Rav Dimi Min Hadar, and apparently that caused the kitzrug against Rav Adababa. Rav Dimi Min Hadar, that's what he's saying. He's saying that I take the blame on myself. I should have been more careful with what I said.
Well, but
yeah.
It didn't turn out to be.
Rav Dimi Min Hadar, ma no anishte dafsid grogus didi. Rav Dimi Min Hadar says, I'm the one who's at fault for that he got punished because he ruined my figs, and therefore I wasn't mochel. Abaya Omar no anishte. Abaya comes in and says, I'm actually the one who caused his punishment. The Omalahu the Rabbonin, because Rab Adab Abba used to say to the Chachamim, Adab Gamitu Garmi Be Abaya, instead of gnawing at bones by Abaya, by Abaya, Tu Ichlu Bisra Shmeina Be Rava, come eat fat meat by Rava. Meaning, in other words, the Rashi says, there's a metaphor, by Abaya, the learning is not very satisfactory. Come learn clear, clarified halachas by Rava. Not really Lashon Hara, but it wasn't a respectful thing to say about Abaya. Although, actually, Marsha says an interesting word about it. He says maybe it wasn't so much an insult, but we know there's only six places in Shas where the halacha is like Abaya. And the simon for them is Ya'al Kagam. Ya'al Kagam is the same gematria as the word Garmi. So Adam Gamitu Garmi Be Abaya, instead of you going and learning by Abaya, and in the end the halacha is like him in only the six cases that have the gematria of Garmi. No, not Garmi, called. Garmi means bone.
No.
Instead of eating the bones, where all you're going to have is six cases of halacha is lichen, come eat fat meat by rabbi. But therefore, Abai is saying, I may have resented him for that, and then not been meichel him fully, and therefore, yeah. Rava, the Rava Omer, I know Anishte, whereas Rava says, I'm at fault for having punished him. So because when Rav Adab Abba would go to the butcher shop to buy meat, Omer lehu letabchi, he would tell the butchers, I'm not shakil mebistrim, kamei shamei de Rava. I should be served my meat first ahead of the servant of Rava, because I'm greater than him. This is what we were talking about before. In context, the pashtus, it means that he says I'm greater than the servant. Nevertheless, though, the servant is doing it on behalf of Rava. Rav Adab Abba should have considered that, and he didn't. But like we were saying before, Marshal says it could have been misunderstood also that he's saying I'm greater than Rava, and therefore that was another layer of the problem.
And the same thing happened to Yehuda ben Yechezkel.
Yeah, and that guy. And that, yeah, and that guy made fun of him and got
himself.
That was that whole story.
He didn't even die. He just got in Cherub.
Yeah, okay.
And then they found out it was inevitable, right, which is almost worse than that.
Yeah. Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Amar no anishtei. Then Rav Nachman Yitzchak says I'm at fault that he got punished. Why? Did Rav Nachman Yitzchak Reish Kala have it? Now, Rav Nachman Yitzchak was the Reish Kala, which means Rashi says his job was to give the public drosha on Shabbat. And other Mephoshim out on Yom Tov as well. Wait. We're giving the background of the story, how it comes about that he caused Rav Adab Abba's death. So, Rav Nachman Yitzchak is the Reish Kala. Kol Yosef, by the way, you know, you can see over here, we're talking about several different generations of Amoraim all at one time. Rav Yosef is from the third generation of Amoraim. Rava and Abaya are from the fourth one. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak already is from the fifth one. And Rav Dimi Minahadah also, by the way, Rav Shur Gaon mentioned that this Rav Dimi Minahadah of our story eventually became the Rosh Hashiva of Pompidita many years later.
He was
not a nobody, but at the time, he didn't know the answer to this. Okay.
We don't know how old he was at the time.
No, but very young. He must have been very young, yeah.
Because Rav Yosef was
told us Tanoim Rami Roy points out from when Rav Yosef passed away until Rav Dimi Minahadah passed away, according to the figures given in Agaris of Shur Gaon, it's something like 65 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, he must have, you could say he might have been in his 20s at the time, let's say he lived to 90. Yeah, something like that. Okay. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak Reish Kalahava. Kol Yoma Mikama Deneo Lakala, so every day or each Shabbos, before he would go into Kakala, before he would go to give his drasha, Marhit Basri of Adaba Abba Lashmite, first he would run it over quickly with Rav Adaba Abba, Bahada Ayo Lakala, and then Rav Nachmitzko would go in and deliver the drasha. Hahu Yoma, now that particular day, that when Rav Adaba Abba passed away, Naktur a Papa of Rav Hunna Bredi Rav Yeshua Rav Adaba Abba. Rav Papa and Rav Huna Brevi Rav Yeshua, who were Talmudim of Rava, grabbed a hold of Rav Adaba Abba, Mishum Deloihavu B'Siyuma, because they were not at the Siyum. What is the Siyum? Rashi says two possibilities. One is they didn't know that Rav Nachman Yitzchak had been appointed Reish Kala. They weren't there when it was voted on. That's what it means, the Siyum, when they determined, when it was decided that he's going to be the new Reish Kala. The other explanation Rashi says is it means that when Rava had previously finished his drasha, when on a previous Shabbos he had darshan on the halachas in the last parak of Masechta Bechoras, they weren't there at the time. So they missed it. Now they wanted to catch up. Omrulay, so they say to Rav Adaba Abba, Emelon hani shmaitse the Maisa Behema hechamun Rava. Tell us these teachings about the dinim of Maisa Behema that are in the last parak of Bechoras that we missed. What did Rava say? And in fact, Marsha points out that that's the only parak of Masechta Bechoras that's not noyig nowadays. Most of the rest of Masechta Bechoras talks about the dinim of Bechor Behema and Bechor Adam and Petra Hamur, all of which is noyig nowadays. Maisa Behema is not, but there's a lot of details in that last parak which Rava Taka is Machadish, is a Machadish dinim over there, so therefore they wanted to learn them. Yeah. So Rav Adaba Abba started telling them, Hachi Amar Rava. He starts telling them, Rava said this and Rava said that, going over the whole thing with them. Ada Hachi Nogalei L'Rav Nachman Yitzchak L'Osir Rav Adaba Abba. Meanwhile, it's getting late, Rav Nachman Yitzchak is not starting his drasha, and Rav Adaba Abba is not there yet to review it with him like usual. Omalei Ravonan L'Rav Nachman Yitzchak Kum. So the other Ravonan says to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, get up, start saying the drasha, the Nogalon, it's getting late, Loma Yosef Mara, why are you sitting? Now, he hadn't had the chance to review it with Rav Adaba Abba, so he felt unprepared. So he held it against Rav Adaba Abba for not being there, for not being there and for causing him this embarrassment. Omar, he says, Yasivna v'kamintra la'arsed Rav Adaba Abba. I'm sitting here waiting for the coffin of Rav Adaba Abba. It's a very sharp thing to say, but in other words, he felt so strongly that Rav Adaba Abba caused him this public embarrassment. Adahochi, as this was going on, not a colored enough after the Rav Adaba Abba. Sure enough, a voice of news started spreading that Rav Adaba Abba passed away. Or Mistabra, and therefore it's logical that Rav Nachman Yitzchak Anshe, that Rav Nachman Yitzchak is the one who caused that to happen because his was the last thing. Now, all of them were, now the reason, the Gemara doesn't say it, but based on what Tosfos is saying, Ein Machnis Enosim, Chitzase. But actually, Mephoshim point out, you still need all the other ones as well. The fact of the matter is, it's not like Rav Adaba Abba did it deliberately in order to embarrass Rav Nachman Yitzchak. He did it because Rav Papa and Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua wanted to learn from him. He may not have even realized that Rav Nachman Yitzchak is the Rosh Hashiva. No, so the vote is like this. If it had been only this thing, then Rav Nachman Yitzchak's klala wouldn't have had any effect on him. But because of all the other things, this was the straw that broke the camel's back, and that's it. Then he passed away. Mishnah says, if somebody has a wall near somebody else's wall, the other person, the second person, is not allowed to put another wall near there. Unless he puts the new wall at least four amas away. Now, why we need that four amas, we'll talk about in the Gemara. There's a number of different explanations among the Rishonim. Four amas, actually.
Yeah, no.
But we'll learn a few lines of the Gemara, and then we'll talk about the various explanations that the Rishonim have of what's going on over here. another din, hachaloinos, if a person has windows that are open, then another, if the other person, if the neighbor wants to build a wall that'll block the light, then he's not allowed to do that. Ben milamaylon, ben milamatan, ben kinegdon ab, we learned it in the first parak. Yeah, we talked about it.
The same one?
No, well, it's the same, right, it's the same Mishnah, but we quoted over there, derech agav, in connection with another, in connection with the question of hezekriya, yeah. So with windows, whether above, below, or opposite, you always need four amos. Meaning, the other guy wants to build his wall higher than the window. First of all, it needs to be at least four amos away in order not to block the light. Second of all, the top of the wall needs to be at least four amos above the height of the window, so the guy can't stand on his wall and peek down into the window. Or if the wall
is enough to block light.
Yeah, it's not enough to block it so much. There's still enough room for light to get in.
How much is 4 amos?
4 amos, so that's 6 feet. That's 6 feet. If the wall is lower than the window, then it doesn't matter whether it's within 4 amos or not. It's not blocking the light anyway. However, it needs to be at least 4 amos less than the height of the window in order that the person can't stand on the wall and peek into the window. And if it's the connect gun, if it's opposite the window, then yeah, it has to be 4 amos away so as not to block the light. So the Gemara asks for Kama Hechi Samech. Okay, if you're saying that the other wall has to be at least 4 amos away, how was the first wall there within 4 amos? It sounds like you're talking about the first wall is there within 4 amos.
By
now you're gonna have a second wall which has to be 4 amos away. How is that?
The second is 4 amos away, but the first one not.
It sounds like it's less than that, yeah. Which Tosfos explains that the initial assumption is that we're talking about, let's say, so you had a wall which fell down, and now we're talking about building a new wall. Well, how are you allowed to have that wall there within 4 amos in the first place? Rav Yehuda says, right, what the Mishnah means is like this. If you're going, the other person has a wall and you're going to put a new wall next to it, then you're not allowed to do that, unless you put it at least 4 amos away
from the
original wall. In other words, parallel. However, maskif lo Rava. However, Rava asks on that. V'hamisha haya koisle samocha koisle chaver katani. Doesn't say if you're talking about building a new wall. If your wall was next to somebody else's wall, then you're not allowed to. Then 4 amos. So that doesn't imply you're talking about a new wall. Ella amar Rava hachi katani. Misha haya koisle samocha koisle chaver beruchuk abamis. If you had a wall 4 amos distant from the other guy's wall, parallel to it, the nafal, and your wall fell down, you're not allowed to make your wall now closer to the other guy's wall, unless you have to be at least the same 4 amos distance. In other words, you can't say, well, now that my wall fell down, we don't need 4 amos between our walls after all. Let me move it closer. No, it always needs to be at least 4 amos away.
So you have to destroy your wall?
Not destroy your wall. Your wall is already there. Your wall is already... Wait. According to Rashi, again, there's a number of different explanations. Let's start with Rashi.
Right.
According to Rashi, we're talking about the other guy has a wall over here. You have a wall over here, which is 4 amos distance like it's supposed to be. Your wall collapsed.
Right.
Now you're saying, well, as long as it collapsed anyway, let me move my wall. It's still in my property, after all. Let me be able to move it a little closer. It'll be 3 or 2 out or whatever amos away from your wall. Can't do that. You have to build it in the same location where yours was.
Why would you think you could put it closer?
Why not? It's your property. Your property. I should be allowed to build it closer. The reason is, my timer, the davsha dehocha mali lahochtam. The reason is because stepping on the ground over here between the two walls helps the wall. Because, you know, we're talking about these were dirt floors. The walls are built on foundations that are in the dirt.
Right.
When people walk on the space around the walls, it strengthens the walls because it packs down the dirt more tightly.
Right.
Therefore, if you have 4 amos over there, people will be able to walk through, and therefore you'll have that benefit.
Less than that,
they won't bother walking through, and therefore the other guys are going to lose that benefit. So there are different Rishonim.
I mean, you can walk for less than 6 feet.
Yeah, but it's not comfortable. People wouldn't bother. People would just go a different way around. Okay, different Mefarshim talk about how does the other person have the right to those 4 amos anyway. So they talk about different possibilities. You could have, let's say, for example, that he bought the property of Achila from the king or got it from Hefker or whatever and got the 4 amos together with it. Or it can be that even not automatically when you build a wall you're entitled to that dabsha, you're entitled to have that benefit of the trampling on it within 4 amos of it. A few different possibilities.
I have a question about the 4 amos.
If the guy's wall is by the edge of his property, let's say, why does he have the right to say that you have to build 4 amos into your property?
Oh.
Yeah. So one possibility is, let's say, L'Hakhila, when he got his property, he bought it from the king or whatever, and therefore he had that 4 amos come along with it.
So he would have had to buy a like that.
Yeah.
he couldn't have built it in the first place
next to it because he would have had to build two amas away. Let's say. Anyway,
yeah,
there's a lot of different explanations among the Rishonim about what we're dealing with over here, and part of it also depends on the girsa. The girsa we have over here is that your wall fell down. But there was a number of other possibilities. The Rabbi Chaim Gaon explains, for example, we are talking about parallel walls, but not necessarily anything fell down. We're talking about l'chatchila, you had a wall within four amas of the other guy's wall. Fine. Let's say you got permission from him, whatever it is. Now you want to build. So now he has a wall over here.
Property goes after the other guy's wall?
Let's say, for example, so he has a wall here. You have a wall over here within four amas of his. Fine. For whatever reason, it's no problem. Now you want to build another wall further on your property. You have to keep it at least four amas away from your original wall because the same idea, the foot traffic between the two walls will pack down the dirt, which will also end up helping that guy's wall as well. He has the right to be able to demand according to the high garden. That's how it works. And then there's a whole different mahalach that many other Rishonim have that Amman brings it, that Nagash talks about it, that we're talking about where you have the two walls are in an L shape to each other.
Right.
Reuven has a wall over here, you have a wall over here,
right,
and now you want to build another wall over here. So now the thing is going to be shaped like a base, is what Amman puts it. You have to make sure that between here and here, that the inside of that space, that's now going to be surrounded by three walls, is formless for the same idea that people will walk in. So people will walk in there, and the ground will get tamped down. According to Rabbi Goin, maybe we're not necessarily talking about on your property. Maybe we're talking about, for example, you have a wall that's built on his property. For whatever reason, he gave you permission to build a wall there. Now you want to build another wall also on his property. You have to keep it four amas away.
Okay, that's cool.
Maybe. I don't know. All right, well, we'll stop here and continue to our best, Shem.